Welcome to Foundation. For more episodes, check out foundation.kr. In this episode, I sat down with David Copperfield, an entrepreneur and also one of the greatest magicians of our time. Let's go talk to him.
Thanks for agreeing to do this.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
This is awesome because, you know, typically I have tech entrepreneurs on the show.
Yes.
And then I realized that when Tony Hsieh said that you were available, I realized you're actually an entrepreneur as well. And I wanted to dig into that a little bit and talk about, you know, how you got started and kind of discover your whole history of how you got to where you are today.
I think we're kind of all in the same business. So we all try to push the envelope. We all try to do things differently, try to have a take what we do well and then change the world in our own little way, whether we're a tech person or an entertainer or a communicator or a writer. You know, I started as a very bad ventriloquist when I was a little kid, and by watching this guy named Paul Winchell on TV, and he invented the artificial heart. He had a patent for the artificial heart. He was a ventriloquist, and he invented the first patent for the artificial heart. So it kind of inspired me to take entertainment and not just stop at that. To think of applying, you know, my interests, my loves, my passions to as many other things, you know.
What age were you when you first got into, were you actually a ventriloquist yourself?
I was really horrible at 7 years old, and they couldn't tell which one was a dummy, so I had to get rid of that. And I started doing magic, and magic, for some reason, was very easy for me. It was a very, very, I sucked at everything else, but at magic, I was good at it.
At seven, where did you find your first trick? I mean, who brought that to you? Was that something where your family did that? Or?
I'd go to the library and I would take out a book. Remember libraries, by the way?
Still a few of them left.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's under L, I think. I went to the library and I would take the magic book and I would read the effect of what the audience would see, and not look at the method, not look at how the technology of making it work or the secret behind it, and see if I could come up with a way to make it work myself. And I would invent magic by doing that. I'd invent new magic. And when I was 12 years old, I invented my first piece of magic that was published in this encyclopedia, pretty respected encyclopedia of magic called Tarbell Course in Magic. So I was an inventor in magic when I was 12.
What did you do at around 11, you're coming up with this. Do you draw a diagram for how it'll work and you send it off to the company, or how does that work?
It wasn't quite like that, no. It was this was a trick with a flare pen. Remember flare pens?
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember?
Yeah, I know what a flare pen is. I'm 36.
It had a unique quality that when you turn the pen, the top, the little white thing at the top would move with it. So that provided part of the secret of the illusion. So I discovered that, you know, if you did that, and that started me thinking about how I could make a little mind-reading effect with that. So as a little kid, that was, it was easy for me, you know. And when I was 16 years old, I was teaching at NYU. There was a little program in the theater department. I teach the art in magic and trying to do that. So magic, the whole magic part was very, very easy. And I know a lot of your watchers, you know, find, you know, mathematics easy, or they find just how to structure companies easy, or all this kind of. For me, just inventing magic, creating that stuff, or performing it was an easy thing for me. But my real passion was communicating with people. My passion was telling stories. Everything that I wanted to be wasn't a magician. I wanted to be Orson Welles. I wanted to be Frank Capra, great film directors, Frank Sinatra, performers, Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire. I wanted to do what they were, how they were making me feel when I saw a movie, a great movie, or Wizard of Oz. I could really be moved as an audience. But I was good at magic. I was kind of screwed because, you know, I'm like, how am I going to take magic and do that with it? So I had to find a way of combining the two. And that was really the kind of the signature of what I brought to magic. It really was telling stories with magic.
Was your family pretty supportive of you at 16? Or were they like, hey, we want you to go to college. Like, what are you doing?
16, no. 12, yes. 16, you know, you should be a doctor or a lawyer, you know, do that kind of thing. And that, my mother's really tough on me, you know. In my show, I tell a story about my grandfather being really tough on me. But it's really about my mom, who was alive when I wrote that piece in the show. And that negative reinforcement actually worked for me. It was something that really spirited me forward, made me fight to prove that I was right for me, not that she was wrong, but that I was right. So I really struggled to figure out how to make this very off track job a career that I could actually feed a family with. So, but it was really looking at the big picture of what other entertainment forms did, and model myself not after other magicians. I modeled myself after film directors, and in fact, Tony Hsieh was today talking about how great innovation comes from people who are looking outside their own world of expertise to put into their own line of work, and that's my secret. If that's the biggest secret, is to really look at people like yourself and people like Elon Musk, who just didn't take no for an answer and just found ways of interpreting what they were good at and combining with what they learned from other sources.
At what point did you realize this is going to be a career for me? Like, this is something that I can actually make a living at and have a family?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
No, and that's, I make a joke out of it, but it's actually true. I think the people that I really admire, the people who have lasted, stay hungry. They just stay hungry. And they're never really satisfied. I'm not sure that's the healthiest thing in the world. But, I'm always looking to try to expand my my reach on what I can give to people as an artist or as a communicator, so I think I know a lot of people who have very short careers in show business, and it's because they lose that passion, And I thank God I still have it. It's for me. I talk about these three words that are my my thing, and it's passion, preparation, and persistence. And whether you're a magician or an illusionist or a TV producer, or a technological wizard guy, it's a matter of having those same things. You're really passionate about something, you really love, have a belief in something, and are willing to prepare, preparation and or persistence, because God knows, the world throws all this negative stuff at you all the time, and they tell you you can't, and you'll make mistakes, and you have to really, brush yourself off and keep going.
What was the point when you had your first paid gig as a magician?
I think I was 10. Five bucks. Balloon animals. They all look like poodles. Divino, the boy magician, yes. But even that, even in that show, it was, I'd do a routine all with light bulbs. There was a magician who did a light bulb act, but I would do a routine. It was all timed to music, and the lighting counted. Everything, it's like an apple box. The apple, everything counts in a piece of apple packaging. You open it up, and the feel of the paper is important. The colors, the texture, and how it's folded, the fonts that are used. Everything is important. And from when I was a kid, because I looked at these movies, which had beautiful art direction and beautiful lighting and beautiful color combination, I wanted my magic to be that. So I was kind of doing that with my magic, even at a very young age, and probably screwing up a lot, but at least trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were the youngest person elected to the Society of American Magicians. What is that exactly? For the people that don't follow.
To be elected, or?
Of the society.
The Houdini started an organization called the SAM, Society of American Magicians, with another group of people. He was the second president or something like that for 7 years or 9 years. And it's, a lot of great magicians belong to it. It's more of a communal group of hobbyists and professionals, but Houdini was a large part of that, and they've since given me a lot of very flattering awards. But I'm just, again, I think just getting it right, just keep, getting it right is what I try to do. And I've done certain things which are pretty good, and the next things that I'm working now, I'm just, I'm like you. I'm on the iPhone just thinking of ideas, and here's a good music choice for this. Here's a good way of changing the script, and here's how it can affect people in a different way with this art form that's usually meant to go, when I started magic, it was all about making people go like that, which is pretty good. It's not a bad thing to have people, go, mm-hmm. go, wow, how'd you do that? But that was never enough for me. That's like somebody just singing well. That's not enough. You have to have them really care about you or what you're saying, the words you're saying, the stories you're telling, what they know about you as a person. The movie of your life is as important as just being able to sing well. Unfortunately, in magic, if you are able to fool people, they'll think you're a great magician. So there's a lot of magicians who can fool people but are kind of don't have all those other qualities, but people will still go, wow, that was great, you know.
Right.
And you know, the requirement, you know, if somebody has an app and it's an okay app, the world will go, no, that's not so good. You know, the world will go on. But in magic, if something fools you, unfortunately, that is a level of excellence in many people's eyes because they don't know the difference. But that's a kind of frustration for people like me or Penn and Teller, people that are, you know, really, you know, working hard to make a difference and to have a point of view that's unique.
Yeah, what do you think about, speaking of just, you know, a performance versus just someone that's doing standard street magic or something like that, especially with the internet, what do you think about the fact that, you know, you can go on YouTube now and pretty much search for any type of trick, and there'll be some type of explanation or reveal there. Does that bother you? Is that something that, you know, when you have these meetings at the society, you talk about?
Yeah, I haven't been to a few meetings.
I like to think of the society as a secret, like you have to wear black cloaks and things like that.
No, it doesn't work like that. But it's interesting that, you know, it's a really excellent question because the world has obviously changed for everything, you know, not just for magic. We have accessibility, which is good and bad to everything, and good information and bad information. You know, for me, there's two things I can say about it. You know, what I do, ever since there was a guy on TV called The Masked Magician on TV, it was before the internet, where this guy came in who was exposing magic.
Oh, I remember that guy. Yeah. Well, you guys tried to hunt him down at some point.
I didn't. I wasn't a hunter. But but what it did was
kind showing of, all the reveals for all the tricks, right?
But see, you, that's the problem. You thought it was real, and most of them wouldn't work. Most of them were kind of fake explanations that really wouldn't work, you know? But people believed them, which was sort of as bad. It's like the people go, oh, yeah, okay, they were kind of disinterested because they saw what they thought was real when it really would never work if you really think through it. So you want to shake them? No, it's not. We worked hard on this. It's not that simple thing. So what I did in reaction to that, and again, this is before the whole internet, you know, experience happened. What I would do is I would have three or four methods for each of my illusions. When I would fly in my show, and I'd fly, you know, through hoops, and I'd you know, fly in a plexiglass box, and I flew with a girl in my arms, and you know, I would do another illusion. I'd produce banish people from the audience. I'd have four methods, or at least three methods for each illusion. Before I ever debuted, I'd spend like 3 years coming up with an illusion. So if somebody on the internet exposed something, or tried to expose it, or was close, I'd keep the illusion, I'd get to keep it, and I'd change the method. I was in Turkey, and a guy did this illusion where I vanished a bunch of people in the audience, and never did anybody reveal the secret ever in like years of doing it. And this guy was a singer, I didn't know, a Turkish singer. And he went on TV, and for publicity for himself, he went out and he exposed kind of close to what he experienced. Didn't know the whole thing, because they don't really know everything. And the next day, I was able to change the method. I did it a whole different way. And the audience read this thing in the paper, because in Turkish press, it was a huge thing that this guy was exposing my stuff, because I was there for like this 1 week. And I said, you know, I know this guy exposed the thing, and they started booing the guy. They said, boo, maybe to support me. I'm not sure if they were just being patronizing me.
Right.
And then I said, but we're not going to show you this is not the way. And I did the illusion, and they like got up there. It was like Rocky Balboa. You know, they were cheering, yeah, you beat this guy. And you know what that says is that people really are curious. I mean, your audience and, you know, people in this world and your world are really like, they you know, they sit and watch the show. You know, they're like looking like that.
Right.
And some of them are like relaxing and enjoying it. But a lot of them are trying to do that. But in their hearts, people want to dream. People need to dream. People need to be amazed. They really do. It's a human thing that we have. We did a Broadway show, and Francis Ford Coppola, you know, Apocalypse Now and Godfather, he was my collaborator on the show. He is really an amazing, smart guy, technically smart guy. He knows about lighting and all that because of all the movies. He's the first person to show me text messaging. Backstage at Caesar's Palace, he says, David, look at this. This is called text messaging. And he hands me this phone, and he says, watch, hello, David, like this. And he had another phone, he showed him like this. I said, that took so much time. That's never, nobody's going to like this. It's never going to work. This is ridiculous. Watch this. I said, hello, how you doing? That took 1 second. This is ridiculous. I was wrong. But he was ahead of the curve because he showed me this thing for the first time as an example. He would sit in the audience while we were doing rehearsals, 6 months of rehearsals, and he'd watch the show, and all his technical crew would go backstage, because they had to, watching how we did the magic. And they'd go into the audience to see Francis, and the audience would go, Francis, you got to go backstage. This is cooler than the show. What's going on backstage is really great. You got to see this. And he said, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to see it. Hmm. And this is for months. They said, no, when he flies and the thing, we get the thing. No. It was necessary for him to keep the illusion, to keep the fantasy of it. Like Einstein said, you have to hold on to your illusions. You know, if you lose them, you're dead. I said that very badly. But there's a quote of his like that. You know, we need the dream. So I think there's something that in us, no matter how technically savvy you are and how much technology and smart stuff is going on to decipher things, there's a part of us that needs to be transported and needs to believe there's more to more to life than what we know about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the reason that the Elon Musks and so forth, when your interview with him, he talked about his inspiration was comic books as a kid, not other scientists, but comic books. We need to think about the possibilities of that. And that's part of my job. Part of my job is to make people dream, because, when Da Vinci's, helicopter didn't work, it was kind of a dream. And then finally it worked, or Jules Verne's submarine, 20,000 leagues, down there, didn't work, but eventually it worked.
Yeah.
So I think, they are all magicians. And Da Vinci actually was a magician, in fact.
I was going to say, you must be a big fan of Da Vinci's, right?
I mean, who is not a
big
fan?
Do you collect some of his stuff? Because I know you have a lot of Houdini stuff.
I don't know if it's available, I mean, there's the codex, all that stuff that exists. But no, I don't, you?
No.
Want to sell something?
Yeah.
His contributions, obviously, throughout all, the real Renaissance man of all time is obviously Da Vinci. But, Da Vinci wrote a magic book. I found out last year, Da Vinci wrote a magic book. That made me feel really, really good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was interested in what I love. And it's because, creating wonder. He did it for real in many cases. He did it in dreams. And he did it also in creating puzzles and things that could make people dream. And I think that's just great.
Now, he was, a very secretive man, wrote his notes backwards and things like that.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing. But I'd like to talk to you about that as well, because I know that magic obviously is a very kind of secretive art. How do you develop something new? Who do you figure out who to trust?
Well, eventually now we're in a new world, of course. Throughout history, magic invention has become commonplace. The cinema as we know it was a magic effect in a show. At the Theatre Robert Houdin, if you saw the Coppola Dracula movie, there's a scene where Dracula walks into a magic theater and a train in the movie comes at you. And, the movies was a trick. And then eventually storytellers took that and said, I'm going to make that into. I'm going to tell stories with that. Use that. And Georges Méliès, who was a magician, if you saw the movie Hugo, was a performing magician who saw the value of the film. The camera stopped for a second when it was shooting, and the guy disappeared. He said, "Wow, that's a pretty good trick." The camera stops and it jumps in the thing. So that was the first special effects. And so the magician who was Georges Méliès eventually ended up being one of the great film founders of fantasy films and dreaming. And he did the trip to the moon, which we can talk about a little bit later. But I think that piece of technology, which is the cinema, was a secret effect, was a secret. And then finally, was not a secret. Mm-hmm. There was a mind reader named Alexander, the Man Who Knows. You've seen his posters, the guy with the turban reading minds like this, that classic thing. Well, there's a reason he had a turban on, because he had all this electronics in his thing. And nobody knew about electronics. Nobody knew about, people listening, hearing, you know, hearing devices in the bathroom, listening to the ladies go, my husband, you know, wants to buy that Model T and thing, you know, and he on stage, the husband wants a Model T, you know. but nobody knew that a radio was a radio. It wasn't so common.
Right.
So that technology could be used. There's a thing I have in my little museum, a Buddha, and the Buddha has his lips open. And you, the spectator will come from the audience and put your ear up to the lips and it would go, hello. Well, that was a big deal. You know, it's like amazing, this talking Buddha. It's just a speaker and a thing.
Right.
So, you know, who knows what I have now that I'm doing that's going to be, well, it can be used. Somebody
yeah.
that's a lot smarter than me is going to use that and go, you know, make it a thing. You know, when I was a kid, Dick Tracy, there was a cartoon on TV, Saturday Morning Cartoon, Dick Tracy, and Dick Tracy had a wrist radio, and there was a TV, and you could talk to the, you know, the commander in the wrist radio.
I think Apple will have that out in about a year from now.
But they do. I mean, FaceTime is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I bought as a, you know, 40 years ago, I wanted a wrist radio, and it had a little walkie-talkie, and the big, it was on the TV thing, was like a little wrist thing, but the Swinney Soul for Kids was a big thing on your back, a big walkie-talkie on your back with cords down your thing, and you thought you're really cool. Well, now we're talking to my daughter on the phone with FaceTime. It's like, my God, I mean, you know, what's going to happen in our lifetimes? It's amazing.
How do you start off, if you want to come up with a new illusion, say you're in your inventing mode.
Yeah, is it, I am now.
Are you now? So
yeah, absolutely.
Is it, do you start with, okay, let's take for example, like say no one has ever flown before and you say, I want to fly for the first time. Do you start with that seed of the idea, or how do you, or is it the technology first, where you're like, I know we can do this with the tech?
That's a great question. I think, you know, it's like if I was a songwriter and you would ask me which comes first,
right.
the words or the music,
exactly.
they would say it depends. Unless it's Elton John, who only does it one, you know, the music comes first and then he writes the song afterwards. But it all depends. Sometimes there'll be a great piece of technology. I've always wanted to fly. I always wanted to do a flying something. And then I was working on an illusion with to escape from a volcano. An escape from a volcano. I was going to fly out of this volcano. And we were working with lava, all kinds of different things that we could fake lava with and make real lava, you know, studying all that stuff. But then, as I was doing this, working on how I would, you know, get out of this volcano. And a piece of technology came into play. And I said, screw the volcano. This is flying. This is going to be flying.
Is that you researching that and
yeah.
figuring it out? Or do you have a team that works with you?
Both.
Okay.
Both, yeah. I've got great, really talented people. That's like asking a film director who's in charge. I mean, of course, I'm in charge of it, but I've got mm-hmm. people who are very, very smart in their own fields. You know, there's Chris Kenner, Homer Leewag, people on my team that are have worked with me for 20 years that, you know, we research, see what the new technologies are, you know, at the back of the house, a gentleman came up to us and told us about a new thing that's halfway done that we won't talk about now because I'm going to, right now, because of that conversation we had in the back, I'm going to check it out to see.
Right.
At least I'll have maybe a 5-year span where I can use it before you guys take
right.
it and, you know, make phones out of it, you know. So just try to get a shot at, you know, the microwave oven, you know, how does a microwave, you know. It's finding a window of time where
right.
I can use it and amaze people before, you know, you folks amaze people.
You have a large collection of Houdini's objects. Is there anything that you have that you've collected that you're still amazed by that you just haven't explained, like no one knows about yet? Like it's still a secret?
We have just about all of Houdini's stuff. I mean, all of his water torture cell and his notebooks and his handcuffs and
is that
all
public or no? Like as far as the notebooks?
I take exhibitions out of there. I mean, you were there, so you saw it's all kind of very secret stuff, so you can't really do that. But I take exhibitions out from that museum. But, you know, before Houdini, the real guy, even though Houdini's the big famous guy and he did an amazing job, he got his name from Robert Houdin. And Robert Houdin was the real inventor. He invented the mystery clock, which is an amazing piece of technology. He was an automaton inventor because the internet back then was automatons, and he used the technology of that time to amaze people. cell phones and internet back then was ether. You know, that you have ether and put somebody out with ether. That was the cool thing. Or these.
They would do that. They would just knock someone out with.
Well,
ether.
In hospital terms, but they would, and he would.
Have
do
you done that? Have you knocked
all the time? All the time. No. To myself. No. But what he would do is he would levitate his son. And because the craze was this newfound ether thing, he would waft ether through the audience. Not enough to put them out. But they would smell the smell, and they would think that was the method of the boy floating. So he used what was prevalent at the time. Or he used automatons, and he'd make a fake automaton that could do more things than could be done. In my show, I do a piece of internet magic, because that's currently what people are doing. You know, I'm doing stuff where magic happens on people in the middle of the audience, trying to push magic forward. I'm in that inventing mode right now. The thing you asked, to answer your question about, you know, what amazes me, I just literally got a collection of this guy Robert Houdin's work. And he's the guy that inspired Méliès, who created cinema, one of the founding forefathers of cinema. But at the theater, Robert Houdin, after he died, lot of confusing information. But anyway, Houdin floated his son on the stick using ether, supposedly. And it's a very famous picture of the boy floating on this stick. And 20 years ago, I was in France, and a friend of mine who collected all this Houdin stuff, this big film producer named Christian Fechner, took me to his house and reached behind a thing, and he pulled out the gimmick of the technology. It was built for the sun, to fit the sun. And he put it in my hands, and I had it in my hands. And I began to cry, holding this thing. And it's because for 30 years of doing this, I'd watched this picture, this drawing, this thing, and I'm holding the real object in my hand. So I was like, oh my God. And I wanted this for my museum so bad, and of course it belongs in France as part of French culture and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And last year I smuggled it out of France.
Wow. Amazing.
Sorry, French people. I'm taking good care of it, though. Cry no more.
Tell me if this is a true story. I heard one time someone tried to mug you.
Yeah.
And they were unsuccessful.
Well, no, they were successful.
They were successful. They took your wallet.
No, they took everyone else's money. But I, in an act of amazing stupidity, I used magic to not give him my wallet and my passport and so forth. You know, there's a way, there's a technique, and I did it, which is really ridiculous with a gun in your face. So
that's a true story.
Yeah,
I thought that was like an internet thing.
No.
So there was a gun pointed at you. They said, yeah, pull out your wallet, and you made it vanish, and didn't.
No. So that I wasn't that stupid. That one was no. It was a some of my associates with me, and you know, a car pulls up, a bunch of kids come out of the car, and I get my pen out to sign autographs. They didn't know who the hell I was at all. The guns come out like that, you know, in my face, and you know, he was like, no problem. The girls gave the money to him. I showed my pockets empty. They weren't empty. But luckily, they left at that point. But it's really, really stupid. You know, guns in your face, just give them the money.
That's amazing.
Really stupid. What's in your pocket? Bam! No, that didn't happen.
So I want to talk briefly about what you're doing today. Yeah. And where you see yourself in 5 years. I know that you are on a crazy schedule. You have two shows tonight.
Yeah.
And how many shows have you been doing? Like, I've heard it's uninterrupted for how long now?
We're doing 11-week run. I never take a day off during when we're doing runs. So I do 15 shows a week for 11 weeks straight with no days off. But I get to do this and hang out with you guys, right? Which is awesome. So my days are free, you know. But that, you know, that's a different thing. I don't know, in the world of technology and business, what is an example of me doing a show? What would you say when I go, I get to walk out and people are smiling at me and they're like happy and they're applauding and they like look at me like they really, there's a couple people that don't really love me, but you know, mostly they're there. They paid, you know, the $100 or whatever. They said they're kind of happy, you know, so it's kind of a good thing. The day before of doing the business or the lawyers or the contracts, that's no good. But the show itself, is it, what's that in your world?
I think it has to be when you're doing a startup and you get so much excitement that it doesn't feel like you're working. You're doing what you love, and so you lose track of time. It's 2 a.m. It's kind of the same idea. Thing. Yeah.
And then when it works, that's probably the thing.
You get the adrenaline you get in the rush. Yeah.
So the shows don't, you know, you shouldn't, you know, pat me on the back for doing that many shows. And like, oh, that's good.
But we take like sick days.
I take 10 weeks off a year, 10 or 12 weeks off a year.
Yeah.
And I go, you know, I've got a nice place to go. So it's, you know, it's good. But right now, you know, I'm inventing new stuff all the time. And that's good. That's like the startup. That's the example of startup.
Sure.
Tons of problems and struggles, puzzles that have to be solved. But when you make that turn and finally something that doesn't work for a while finally works, it's really rewarding.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I'm doing a thing in my show now where I'm levitating a guy in the audience, surrounded by them, like right in the middle of the audience, you know, not in the aisle, just right in the middle of the audience. And for 2 years, you know, the levitation part of it was an invention of a friend of mine, the levitation part. But another thing happens in the middle of the audience, where you couldn't do it in the middle of the audience. So we took 2 years with this one guy's invention and added our invention to it, the fact of doing it in the audience in that kind of condition. And it didn't work for 2 years. And just, it wouldn't be right. And after every show, I would keep the audience, I'd keep 100 people from the audience. And they'd stay there and I'd try this out and I'd interview them. And they'd say, oh, that sucked. And then we saw that, and you know. And then we do it again and again and again, just trying to kind of carve off all the problem areas.
And these are real audience members that you had.
Yeah,
that's real amazing. That
and you swear them to secrecy. Please don't Google it. Don't you know, put this on your Facebook.
Right.
And they go, oh, please don't talk about that. And they kind of did it. They kind of, I had no haters, you know, luckily in those groups. So.
That is the PC term, haters. I think that's right.
I didn't have assholes either. No assholes either. So. They actually were pretty good. And but for 2 years, and finally it worked. And it's amazing. Now I get up there, and I can't wait to do it. You know, I do it, and I watch. And my staff, who works as hard, if not harder than me, sits there around me and the thing, and they see the audience go, whoa, like erupt in like amazement. And they sit there, and they go, they were part of something that they worked hard, and they see it finally happen. So that's very rewarding, just to watch my own people's faces be rewarded by failure, 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 success, and it finally works. And it's good, you know. And so that process is very good. We're creating a new show now that's really based on inspiring people, trying to take people, using magic as a metaphor, to live the impossible, to find whatever your own impossible is in your own life. Especially if you're not a magician. Find that thing you were told no about, that you couldn't do, you know, the fact that, you know, Everest was an impossible thing until 60 years ago today, that, you know, and then if one guy does it, and then, okay, people are doing it, it's not in the news. It's a common thing, you know, running the, you know, the Roger Bannister mile, the 4-minute mile. It was impossible. So my magic is really a kind of a metaphor of that. You know, I'm trying not to do tricks because there are really hard work behind it. I'm trying to do things that will inspire people, hopefully, to take their own lives and find possibilities and get a little bit of strength that, you know, they can do it too, whatever their endeavor is.
And this isn't something where you invent something and you roll it into your existing show, or is it you're going to unveil a whole new show in a few years?
No, my technique, I don't have, I'm not that... ballsy. No, I slowly put things into the show, and I do the Beatles. You know, I used to love how the Beatles would have an album, and there was, you know, things that they knew people would love, and then they'd stick in the album something that would be a test, and that would, if that had legs, they would expand it out. Mm-hmm. So I kind of try to I know where I'm going with the stuff, and the stuff that's risky or new, technologically new or interesting or story interesting or revolutionary in my own way, I'll sneak that in the show. And there's a piece I'm doing in the show, and people are liking it right now, with a little alien, and I have a stuffed animal on stage to represent the alien. people don't mind. It's my family goes, why? How can you're having this stupid stuffed animal as part of this trick? It's not, do wait for the real thing. But no, I'm trying it out slowly to kind of see. I guess in technological terms, it would be kind of market testing. What would you call when you
like a beta test?
Like a beta test.
Yeah.
But I charge money for my beta test.
Yeah.
It has to be good enough, you know.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Can I get a round of applause for David?
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.